Well, hello and welcome to Talk About Jazz with Doug Hall. I'm your host, Doug Hall, and today we have a guest musician with a very thorough background and resume, starting with her graduate study in Berklee College of Music. Anna Petrova joins us today, and she is a graduate, a bachelor's degree in professional music and performance at Berklee College of Music, and then also holds a master's degree in the Berklee Global Jazz Institute, and is currently an assistant professor with the ensemble department. Along with her degrees, she also has an accomplished resume, which includes performances with many renowned artists, such as Terry Lynn Carrington, John Patitucci, Joe Lovano, Dave Liebman, Noah Preminger, Alan Chase, Patricia Perez, Marco Pignataro, Ellis Hall, and Catherine Russell. She has also already been present at several international music festivals, including the Umbrea Jazz Festival in 2013 in Italy, the Wave of Ideas in 2015 in Bulgaria, the Panama Jazz Festival 2020 and 21, the Berklee Beantown Jazz Festival in 2018 in Boston, and the Monterey Jazz Festival in California in 2018, the Solar Jazz Festival in 2021 in Massachusetts, and finally the Arlington Jazz Festival in 2022 here in Massachusetts. In addition, Anna was awarded a Downbeat Student Music Award for the Best Graduate Arrangement in 2019. In 2021, she received a Grand Prix at the International Jazz Bridge Competition as a pianist, composer, and arranger, and became the finalist at Jacksonville Jazz Piano Competition. In 2022, Anna received a prestigious New Jazz Legacy Grant, which allowed her to perform alongside the renowned jazz saxophonist Chris Potter, and to receive mentorship also from the acclaimed jazz pianist Chris Davis. She is currently working on her debut album and is a principal pianist and organist for Champion, an Opera in Jazz, written by Terrence Blanchard as part of the Boston Lyric Opera. So that's quite a lengthy resume, but now we want to welcome you, Anna, and look forward to a conversation a bit about your background and your current pursuits and maybe some questions in between. I'd like to jump into simply asking you a bit about the experience you had within the MA program in Berklee Global Jazz Institute.
Yeah, that program certainly changed my life. I felt like I got my answers. I had questions, a lot of questions. Coming back from Kazakhstan, I had questions like, how do I play over this chord? How do I play this scale? And then when I came to the Institute, I realized that I was looking into the wrong thing. I should not have looked at the technicalities of the process. It's more of a reflection of what we feel, of what we go through. Music becomes the canvas to paint everything that's happening in the inside world and what you think about the outside world and surroundings you live in. So I definitely got my answers, and one of the strongest focuses of the program is seeing music as more than just a tool for entertainment. It's more than just something to listen to as a background music in the car. It's a powerful tool, and it makes us responsible for what we carry. Every time we perform, we touch somebody else's heart, and it is a responsibility. Another idea, seed of idea that Marco Pignataro gave us as a pedagogy mentor, he said, we are educators wherever we go. If we play, if we talk, we are educating. So whatever you say, it matters. It's important. It might change life or might also negatively affect it. So we're responsible. Musicians as humans. And the new FRS, one of my closest mentors, is definitely emphasizing that, as Wayne Shorter said, music is just a drop in the ocean of life. And if we want to improve music, we have to improve life.
Right, right. Along the line of mentorships, can you give me some sort of example of a personal connection or experience that you had with one of the mentors, of which there are many wonderful and very gifted musicians within this program?
I would definitely say that Terlin Carrington is one of my biggest mentors.
Okay.
I think part of the reason is also because she's a superwoman. She's mm-hmm. a warrior. She's one of the people who takes action. She doesn't talk. She puts words mm-hmm. words in action. If she has a project in mind, tomorrow you're going to hear that this is going to happen on this date in a few years, maybe in a month.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that she's going to take care of that, and she's going to take care of that herself. She's not even going to ask for help.
Right.
And I really admire that. She has been such an inspiration to me. I first saw her in Almaty, actually, in my hometown. Mm-hmm. That was one of the only jazz concerts that ever happened in my area of that caliber. And she came with her Mosaic project in 2014, I believe. And I just couldn't believe it. I saw many incredible women the same time on stage mm-hmm. playing the music that I really, really loved. And I mm-hmm. related to so much. And I couldn't share it with anyone, really, because there was no one back home to play with. So my teacher learned about jazz tradition by transcribing records of Bill Evans, listening to American radio that was prohibited at night, transcribing and just listening. And then he passed his knowledge to me, and I started. And I also lost most of my musicians because they went for education somewhere else too. They moved. So I came here to play with more people because Berkeley is definitely a wonderful place. And I mean, the whole United States is a wonderful place for this music.
Right, right.
To develop.
Well, along with mentorship, and I've asked this question of other students and programs at Berkeley, students share in this program. I mean, there's this sharing. What would be an experience that you came away with where you learned something maybe philosophically or technically or performance-wise from another student?
From another student? Well, the biggest thing, I think, and I now being a professor, I always share with my students that you won't believe it, but you will be playing with your classmates later on because you see how they react. You see how, if they're responsible, if they show up on time, if they're preparing their homework, if they do all that, you can hire them for a gig after you graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just crucial for me to establish those connections at the Berklee Global Jazz Institute. I was already a part of that institute as an undergraduate student, so I got a great glimpse of what they're doing, and I just wanted to continue doing that and applied for the master's, and fortunately was able to get into the program. And talking about students, well, it was definitely a powerful experience to play with a lot of them in the program because people come from many different places in the world. Like you don't realize how many countries there are on the map until you enter an international program and you meet a person who plays a Palestinian flute and you all could connect on the platform of jazz or free improvisation. I still think about the students, what I learned from students.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to think about that more.
Yeah. No, it's a very good answer.
I mean, you are play with them.
You are interacting with people who've come from all over the world in this institute, in this mm-hmm. particular program, and it's remarkable. And I remember interviewing Danilo Perez many years ago about the program, and he had some very philosophical statements to make, but he also was very serious about the direction of the program not being just about talent, but being about sharing and giving back to the community and seeing mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the worldview that you talked about that you felt in that program.
Mm-hmm.
And he used the phrase, I asked him about talent, and he said, Doug, talent is a four-letter word. He said, that only gets you so far. It doesn't get you the whole package. It only mm-hmm. gets you so far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said that he was looking for people that want to share and give back in the program. And those that come to him that don't have that interest, that more internally it's about them, that he wasn't interested in them as candidates. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very revealing.
It is pretty revealing. Yeah. One of the big components of the program is giving back to the community and serving at outreaches every Friday. So we would go to senior houses, we would go to mental hospitals, we would go to correctional facilities, and we would play music there and see how it would affect people positively. And it was life-changing. It was life-changing. You ask a question, who has access to music? Are we playing for people who can afford to go to the concerts, or who are we playing for? And I always remember the concert pianist from London that went to Thailand and started playing for elephants. Can't remember his name, but you know, that's also, it's a mission.
Yeah, sure.
And Global Jazz definitely has a mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really was affected by my conversation with Danilo. It was really very positive. Well, at this point, I think we're going to move towards playing your two musical selections. And we have The Gift of Life and Villain Vanguard. Okay, interesting title. Do you want to talk briefly about these two pieces, and then you and I can kind of respond after we listen to both of them? You want to just give a brief introduction to these two pieces?
Yeah, The Gift of Life was a part of one of my graduate projects, and it was dedicated to my mom, who was pretty ill at the time, and I released it a few months before she passed away. She heard the track, but it definitely it had a lot of weight because she passed away shortly after, and it was the only completely free improvised track on the whole recording, and it was a piano solo one too, and I did a few takes, and then I realized that the first one actually, that was the real one, and they decided to keep it.
Wow. Okay, well, thank you for choosing it to share with us today. And Villain Vanguard.
So that one is by Brias Kornberg, the trumpet player, and it's from the book New Standards, which I helped, I had the pleasure helping Terry put together.
Yes.
It features compositions by women composers and strives to promote equality and the big part of jazz culture that we're missing out on a lot. And this is one of the songs from the book. And we played at the Charles River Jazz Festival in July this year with several graduate and current students from Jazz and Gender Justice Institute, and this was one of the songs that really, you know, really, really brought my attention because of the energy and because how it unfolds, and then it actually becomes free improvisation. It becomes a collective improvisation for a second, and then it gets back to from this harmonic mess. It just gets back to where it was, to the groove, and it almost, like, to me, it sounds like a reflection of life. It's like there's this whole mess that we're all creating, and collectively something that's happening, something that's boiling, stirring, and then it just comes to the groove and it makes sense.
Okay. Well, let's see. Maybe since you just finished talking about Villain Vanguard, can we cue that up and listen to that? I'm starting a little bit further into it, so we're picking up where your piano is working more with the saxophone player. So just a lot of energy to that piece. And for me, I hear that this conversation going on between you and the you as the pianist and the saxophone player, and the tempo changing and kind of being very melodic, and then going from melodic to being a little bit more broken up, a little more spontaneous, a little more improvised. So there's a lot of, and it feels live. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that sort of dynamic feeling that I guess you just don't always have in a recorded studio. It's there. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting piece because you really have two instruments having this conversation, and that's what my ears are focusing on. So I enjoyed the piece very much. And if you wanted to add anything back, that's fine. The saxophone player is phenomenal. So.
Yeah, she's incredible. It's Veronica Leahy. It was definitely a pleasure to combine several musicians I really enjoy as individual leaders on stage, because we ended up playing one of her tunes. We ended up playing a tune of Devon Gates, who's a wonderful bass player too. Ilya Blaj is a drummer we've been working together too. Just wonderful combination of people. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to surprise you with a coincidence that just became apparent to me. We had Veronica Leahy in here for as a guest for a piece for a podcast recently. So I will send that to you if you're interested in hearing her in your seat there talking about her background experience and recording. So that's interesting. That makes an incredible connection for me to hear her play so differently than the two songs that she chose for this podcast when she was here several weeks ago. Well, wonderful. So we'll segue into A Gift of Life. And since it's approximately 2 minutes, we'll simply listen to the entire piece. Again, just a beautiful contemplative piece, very moving. And it, funny enough, it takes me into a classical frame of mind, almost a classical style of piano playing. It sounded to me some of the chords and the arrangement way. So it's really a piece to listen to. I almost thought in terms of somewhat how Bill Evans approached the piano. So I just make my observations and try to retain some notes for me. So that's I've listened to it now several times. So do you have any more thoughts on how it sounds to you?
It's interesting that you mentioned Bill Evans, because Bill Evans, you know, has been a big influence for me. I think he's one of the artists I listened to the whole discography several times throughout life.
Wow.
Because as I mentioned, my teacher was really into Bill Evans, and he would be transcribing it. He was really, you know, that's like the first thing I knew about jazz was Bill Evans, surprisingly enough, because I came to my first jazz lesson. I was a classical pianist. I had never seen metronome. He asked me if I could play something besides classical music. I said I have no idea what A minor means or chord symbols. I had no idea what improvisation is. And he sat at the piano and he played something like My Foolish Heart, I think, but in the version of Bill Evans.
Right.
And I was like, wow, there's so much freedom under his fingers, and I wish I could have that freedom. And then, you know, years later, I completely quit playing classical music, and I never looked back.
Yeah.
And you mentioned classical, because I do come from a classical background.
Right.
My parents both, they went to the conservatory as well, as classical violinists. Mm-hmm. So classical music was a very big part of our lives when I was growing up.
Right. Yeah, well, without an understanding of piano and what's occurring, I'm a huge fan of Bill Evans, and I remember I wrote a profile of Tony Bennett's life, and they intersected, of course, and became really close for a period of time and produced recordings together. And then later, Tony Bennett was touring, and it was a turn in Bill Evans' health, probably never very healthy throughout most of his life. And Evans called him because they were in the same city together, and Bennett was totally surprised. How did you find me? And I haven't heard from you in years. And Evans said, well, I may see you tonight at the show. I may stop in. And he said, okay. And good to hear from you. And any suggestions? And he said, yeah. He said, just play with truth and beauty, and you'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, wow. Anyway, powerful statement. But thank you for sharing two very different pieces, but that's the wonderful variety of jazz and having an opportunity to have a musician with us, such as yourself. Moving forward and on to the new Jazz Legacy Grant that you'd received in 2022, can you talk a little bit about your experience working with the renowned jazz saxophonist Chris Potter? What was that like?
That was life-changing. And that was the beginning of my email to Terling Carrington. Once we finished the residency at Smoke and we played the side door a few shows too, I wrote her a message and I said, this was life-changing. This grant really let me experience something I've never experienced on stage, because I've never felt so pushed and so cared for at the same time. Chris is the sweetest person I've ever worked with, and he's just treats everyone with so much respect, including the guests, including anyone on the street, just everyone, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just really made me think, like, this, you know, the attitude, that there is attitude issue in the jazz industry, it just made me think that, you know, once you get to the top, who are you trying to prove anything to?
Right.
You know, so it was incredible.
And you also, speaking of acclaimed musicians, you have worked directly with Terrence Blanchard on his score for his musical ballet, Champion, an opera in jazz.
That was in Boston. It was by Boston Lyric Opera. It wasn't the one that was presented just right now at the Met.
Right.
That was at the time where I was doing the residency with Chris.
Right.
And half of our band was actually involved with the actual band with Better Invention.
I was there.
Yeah?
I was there in the audience. I loved it. I sought it out and I wrote a review about it.
Yeah. So Boston Lyric Boston Lyric Opera put together their own version of it, and it was really tough because COVID was very much there, and every week we would be losing performers, we would be working with subs. The lead singer, we never rehearsed with her, she just stepped in. Mm-hmm. The conductor, he did not recover by the time we needed him to be there, and mm-hmm. he just ended up coming to the show, attending it as a listener. We ended up performing with a subconductor.
Right. I remember the lead performer was wearing a mask mm-hmm. when he wasn't singing. So finally, I wanted to quickly have you have an opportunity to talk about your upcoming debut album and maybe where the inspiration for that comes from.
So I do have a few unreleased albums sitting mm-hmm. on my shelf. And, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned That Sounds Live. And I also mentioned over my email, I said, I'm really into performing live more than recording. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about it a lot, like over the last couple of days. I was trying to find an answer. Why is that the case? And I think recording really stresses me out. Like I don't like mm-hmm. the idea of capturing something in time and creating this timestamp and to be able to come back to it. I don't resonate with that. I resonate with the idea of exploring in the moment things mm-hmm. that pass away, pass by, and just they leave the chat. They just
okay. Right.
They disappear in the void, and I like that. I like that. I like right. that none of my performances are the same, and after they're done, they disappear. And of course, it's definitely less anxiety, I guess, because you know it's not recorded. Because part mm-hmm. of the reason why I'm freaking out in the studio because it's this red button.
I think I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of my debut album, I have a few that are sitting on my shelf. I'm still deciding which one would be
sure.
great. But also, one of the things that I would love to record is definitely a dedication to my mom, because mm-hmm. she passed away and she's been right. such a big influence on my life.
Right. Well, we've come to the end of our program, and I want to thank you again for sharing with us and having an opportunity to learn more about another jazz musician and all that you've already accomplished, certainly in a young life. And obviously, there's plenty of projects ahead of you and plenty of other experiences to look forward to. So thank you again, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.